The Web's Michael Smith. It is episode 138, and you know what?
What's that?
We got a lot of information to pour out here. See what I did there?
I wish I had a can to open right next to the microphone, but I don't.
You want me to pour a draft for you?
Instead, I just have some delicious draft Storm Brew. Cheers.
Oh, cheers to you.
Clink.
They're 97 calories. A crisp, light, refreshing lager.
2.4 carbs per serving. We're here at R&D Brewing in Raleigh, North Carolina. The fine folks who brew Storm Brew, which sponsors Cane's Cast.
Thank you.
Thank you to R&D Brewing.
Thank you.
Thank you to Storm Brew.
Thank you.
Any other thank yous?
Well, thanks to everybody who's tuning in today as well.
Thank you.
We've got a great episode for you today. We're going to bring in Ian Van Gundy, who is the award-winning brewmaster here at R&D Brewing. And like I said, we are recording this live on location at R&D Brewing, just off Capitol Boulevard in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hi!
And, wow, you're really going to town on these.
Hammering them early.
Exciting stuff today that we're going to talk to Ian about Storm Brew, about some of the new Isla seltzers that R&D is brewing here. Spoiler alert, they're delicious.
Yeah, you're a big seltzer guy, and on the record, I am not.
I had the opportunity actually to come here last week and taste test the two new flavors, but we'll get into that just a little bit later. It's a little tease for later. Right now, we're enjoying Storm Brews, which again, crisp light lager, the official beer of the Carolina Hurricanes, and they sponsor Cane's Cast. You can find them at most major retailers, new store locations added daily.
Thank you.
And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast and making a delicious, delicious beverage for us all to enjoy.
And they let us consume it while we're...
Yeah, just don't tell our bosses.
No, they don't need to know this. While we are doing this podcast, we are waiting patiently to drink a Storm Brew. Waiting patiently.
Yeah, it's not happening right now. Never.
That water is tasty.
Yeah, oh, yeah, got to stay hydrated. No, it's Storm Brew. It's delicious.
It's Storm Brew, yes.
Thank you.
All right, well, let's dive into the pod here, episode 138. We didn't bring you an episode last week because we had rounded out the week before with a special Friday edition of Cane's Cast. We held off last week as the Hurricanes got back into town from the Toronto bubble, from the hub city, the Eastern Conference hub city, where they were ousted in five games by the Boston Bruins.
I hate saying that they were ousted in five games by the Bruins.
The Bruins are about to be ousted in five games by the Tampa Bay Lightning.
That they are.
We can talk more about that in just a bit. Since the Hurricanes have been back, they have held a number of virtual press conferences over Zoom. That is the go-to way to talk to people now during this pandemic.
Yes.
And we've heard from head coach Rod Brind'Amour. We've heard from president and general manager Don Waddell. We've heard from captain Jordan Staal, alternate captain Jordan Martinook. We've heard from alternate captain Jacob Slavin and Andrei Svechnikov as well. We'll probably hear from some more players here in the coming days as the Hurricanes continue to sort of wind down their season. A bit different from previous seasons, obviously, where normally we'd go into the locker room for a morning and basically talk to everybody. But obviously we can't do that now. Who knows when we'll ever be able to do that again, hopefully one day. But we've heard from some of the players, the head coach, the general manager, and I think really the main takeaway, at least for me, in these first couple of weeks, and get your thoughts on it too, but the main takeaway for me is that there are a lot of encouraging signs around this team.
Yes.
I think last year, the 2018-19 season was really, when you look at the run the Hurricanes made from January 1st on through the Eastern Conference Final, it was a whirlwind. It was a magical run. It was an important step for a number of players in that locker room who had never experienced playoffs to get that experience and sort of dip their toe into that water and really learn what the postseason was all about. And I think this year, the Hurricanes learned some tough lessons, and we talked a little bit about it on the last episode of the podcast. But I think those lessons are going to be a valuable learning tool for this team as they move forward. And there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Hurricanes fan, because you've got players like Sebastian Aho and like Andrei Svechnikov who are going to be cornerstones of this offense for years to come. You've got, you know, a guy like Teuvo Teravainen who is an elite playmaker in the game. You've got a guy like Jacob Slavin who is, you know, one of the league's best defenders. A guy like Dougie Hamilton who might have been in the conversation for Norris Trophy had he not been injured in Columbus in mid-January. He was going to be an all-star as well. There's just a lot to be excited about. For the Hurricanes, and I think the players realize that, and the players realize really the opportunity that's in front of them. And so I think what you're going to see moving forward for the Hurricanes is what steps can they take to take that next step? What steps need to be taken this offseason so that next year, you know, the Hurricanes aren't discussing a first-round exit? Now, this year I think a first-round exit is totally different from any other year, just because of the unique situations of the pause and the expanded tournament and everything. They did go up there and win a playoff series. Yeah. We shouldn't forget that.
I think people are glossing over that.
Yeah.
They swept the Rangers. And the funny thing for me is
a dominant series.
Heading into that series, everybody picked the Rangers. And look,
they were the sexy pick.
I know.
Whatever reason.
I know who we work for. But going into that series, I'm like, people in hockey, do you not look at the rosters and you can sense that, you know, the Canes are the better team? Yes, we know the Rangers were 4-0 against the Canes in the regular season, and the goaltending was great, but everything is reset here. And, yeah, goaltending being the great equalizer, we didn't know how the goaltending was going to pan out in that series. And, you know, Henrik Lundqvist, the funny thing is, he was the starter for the Rangers in the first two games. The loss in game one wasn't on Lundqvist.
No, not at all.
The Canes shut down the Rangers. You know, this team that had Artemi Panarin, the Hart Trophy finalist, and Mika Zibanejad, who, you know, just makes a living off of the Canes. And I'm not wrong. If you look up his stats against the Canes, they are unbelievable. But the Canes had Rod Brind'Amour and a team with playoff experience and a team that was hungry to prove that they're ready to take that step. And I know that they got beat by the Bruins in the first round of the playoffs, according to the NHL. But last year in the conference finals, that felt like a team that wasn't quite ready to play against a team like the Boston Bruins. This playoff series felt like that. And just to go a couple of quotes, Smitty, Jordan Staal said it in the exit, which was, there is definitely that feeling in the room about raising the bar for the Carolina Hurricanes that they've done that.
Yep.
We're getting into the playoffs, not creeping into the playoffs, and we're going to be a team to beat. And that's a good feeling to have. And then we heard Rod Brind'Amour say it, Don Waddell say it, Jordan Martinook say it. The young core that this team that we have is special and very driven.
Yep.
And that, to me, the very driven, those last two words that Jordan Staal said, are huge. Because, yeah, it's one thing to have talented players, but to have talented players who just don't look at their numbers, they're driven to win the whole damn thing. That, to me, is what puts teams over the hump. And I think the Canes have that. And these two playoffs have been learning lessons for players like Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov that you mentioned that are going to be here for a long time and cornerstones, not just of the offense, of the team.
Yeah.
And taking those strides forwards, I can tell you that Sebastian Aho, you've been around him his whole career, as have I. This is burning him up that he's home right now, not playing hockey. And he got knocked out again by the Boston Bruins. He's going to watch this. He's going to watch the face-to-face matchups against the Bergeron line. And he's going to learn from it. And he's going to be better for it. And whatever season we have next year, you're going to see him take another step forward. And Svechnikov take another step forward. The reason being, because they're built that way.
Yep.
They're not going to say, oh, I scored 38 goals last year, or, you know, Svechnikov, I did the lacrosse goal twice. No, I'm ready for the next level. And speaking of the lacrosse goal, we'll get into that in a second or two as well.
The lacrosse goal is now in EA NHL 21.
It's in the game.
EA Sports NHL 21.
Have you buried the hatchet with EA Sports?
I don't know.
I did like that Andrei Svechnikov, when asked about that it was in the game, he replied, yes, and he went out to buy a PlayStation.
He's got a PlayStation now.
So he can do it.
Yeah, which apparently the move is hard to perform, which it should be. Yes. I mean,
well, that shouldn't be as something as simple as hitting, you know, if we're going to go PlayStation, that shouldn't be like hitting the square button. You got to Got to have like a Mortal Kombat finish on this one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I got to go left to the direction of the sun. It took 42 degrees longitude.
No one in the NHL had scored it until Svechnikov did it once and then twice this season, just how special of a player he is. And he was asked about it and asked if he had any more tricks in his bag. And he said, wait and see.
Wait and see.
He's got some more. He is a magician after all. And he's
a treasure,
a varied bag of tricks that he can reach into. I mean, we saw him in the overtime, of game one against Boston, try the lacrosse move. And I mean, it was a great defensive play by Brendan Carlo to knock the puck off his stick. But you know, if Carlo isn't there to knock it off his stick, he's burying that shot. Yep. I'm not sure as a goaltender what you can do aside from just hurling your body in the direction of Svechnikov, whoever's got the puck on their stick. Like even if you get up to the post and you like raise your shoulder, I still don't think
you have to stay on your skates. I think that's the only way. And
yeah,
hug the post.
Because if you're down, there's going to be an opening between your shoulder and your head.
Yeah, I mean, you can try to get over there with your head. Tuukka Rask wasn't getting to that shot. Had Carlo not made that play, and that would have been. I mean, if you can imagine, you know, how great those first two would have been, if that would have won game one of a playoff series in overtime, I mean, it would have been amazing.
It would have been one of the all-time greatest playoff goals.
Yeah.
I'm not putting hyperbole on that. That's just what it would have been. And he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
And I think we take for granted, he's 20 years old, Michael.
Yeah, and he's a great kid, too. I mean, that's another thing. And you know, something that the Hurricanes have emphasized in the last few years, you know, when going out and trying to find players who fit their team, they want to find players who fit into the locker room as well. And Andrei Svechnikov, you know, we've heard Ron Brindamore say from the first moment that he met him, you know, he had seen the tape of Svechnikov and what he was able to do. He had talked to people. As soon as he met him and spoke with him, he knew how good of a kid that he was.
Yeah.
And he's
when he was asked that question, when did you know he was special? The day I met him.
Yeah.
And the answer to it.
Yeah, he's insanely talented. He's a great kid, and he's going to be in a Hurricanes uniform for a long time. Now, Svechnikov was asked, too, about possible contract extension because he does have 1 year left on his entry-level contract.
Loved his answer to this, by the way.
Yeah, and he said, look, I don't really want to know about it until it's time to sign the papers.
But he said he's open for it.
Sure, yeah.
But that's what his agent does. And if they think that's the right thing, the agent will handle it, and then they'll tell me when it's time.
Yeah, he doesn't want to sort of have that bogged down his mind in the last year of his contract. If it's something that gets decided that his agent works with the Hurricanes and they reach an extension before, you know, it's time to approach that subject next summer, they'll do so. But he said he's not really worried about that. His focus is just on playing hockey. So that really tells you, you know, where his mindset is at. And, you know, he's incredibly dialed in to what he has to do to make himself better at the game of hockey. And to think that he's only going to get better, I can't wait to see, you know, what's next from him.
But that's the thing, Michael. If we were to go down the Hurricanes roster and you look at players, are they at their peak? Have they peaked? Or are they still getting there? The Canes have, in my mind, five players who are still getting there, who aren't even near their peak, and they're on the upside of the mountain. I'm not like, oh, they're years away. Sebastian Aho, Andrei Svechnikov, Jacob Slavin, who we have to talk about in this situation. I think we need to include Dougie Hamilton because I think we take for granted that he's a young guy, and people, just because he's been on three teams, think that he's been around forever, but he's not. He's got a long line to get to 30. So there's four players right there who are core. Brett Pesce as well, who missed this series with the upper body injury, missed the entire postseason for the Carolina Hurricanes. So there's
we can say shoulder.
That's fine. It's true. There's five guys. Then you add in Marty Natchez. We don't know what Jake Bean is going to be, but he is on the radar for this organization as being a defender of the future, an offensive defenseman. So you got seven guys right there. Basically, if we're doing the math, that's half your roster who is almost to the top of the mountain, getting ready for their best years in hockey, or they're ready to plant the flag for that. because of where they are with age and ability and desire. So, you know, the future looks pretty good. And again, I hate being the quote machine, but Rod Brind'Amour said it, and I think he said it best about the Bruins series, which was simply, I felt like this year we were in every game, even though I don't know if we played our best in every game.
Yeah.
That, to me, is, by the way, one, Rod Brind'Amour tells the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But at the same time, when he talked about closing the gap between the Bruins and the Canes, he wasn't joking. That's not lip service. They really did. The games felt closer this year than what they did last year. And there were games last year in the conference final where the Canes had the lead, or, you know, it was only one goal after a period, but it didn't feel like it. This, it felt like every game was there for them to take.
And it was. And that
was a tweak here or there.
That was the frustrating part of the series, is that every game was within the team's grasp. And I thought the team matched up better against the Bruins than they did last year. I thought the results, you know, kind of spoke for that on the ice, the fact that the Hurricanes were in every game. You know, there was a chance for the Hurricanes, a golden opportunity for the Hurricanes to even the series in game four. And that's really the toughest lesson out of the whole series, is how that game ended. And you can't help but wonder how it would have played out had the series been in Boston and Raleigh with full buildings and everything, if that would have, changed the outcome at all. They certainly wouldn't have met in the first round of the playoffs. Yep. But that's a fruitless conversation, because that's not what ended up happening. So,
yeah, but I will still just take a look at where this team was heading into the season. Then we have this break. Nobody's really sure. And I know that last year they went further in the playoffs. They made it to the conference finals. But this year, I think that they learned as much in their two rounds of postseason hockey as they did in their three rounds last year, and can take that and move forward. Also, if we're talking about injuries, it was revealed that Andrei Svechnikov had the high ankle sprain in that series with the Boston Bruins, which, by the way, knock on wood, that is the – and not if you're with me, that is – for the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, John Gruden. But you can knock on wood if you're with us.
Weird.
You've never heard him say knock on wood if you're with me?
No, I'm just saying Las Vegas Raiders.
That's
sounds
what
weird.
They are. Sports works out there.
The Raiders of Las Vegas.
Take a look at the hockey team.
Yep.
So, but that looked like it could have been something far worse.
Oh, for sure.
Don't get me wrong. A high ankle sprain is not an easy injury. Because I think sometimes, you know, I'm not going to go the doctor route, but sometimes people will tell you that a high ankle sprain can take longer to recover from, but Andrei Svechnikov said that he'll be good to go whenever the puck drops for the upcoming 2021 season.
He was confident, had the Hurricanes won their first round series, that he'd be back in the second round. That might have been pushing it a little bit, but he certainly would have given it a go. And this is, you know, this is the kid that, had to work his way back from a concussion in last year's playoffs. He is
a treasure.
He is
I will
a treasure.
Keep saying that.
And he did, I think, in many ways get lucky, because it could have been much worse. Yep. But he was determined to get back on the ice and help his teammates, because you could see him sitting in the stands, and that's certainly not where he wanted to be watching us. It's just like when Justin Williams was out in game one. He was sitting right below where we were, and you could just tell it was eating him up for him not to be on the ice in the battle with his teammates. Guys like that, guys who live to compete and relish those moments, those are the guys you want on your team, and the Hurricanes have a number of those guys.
All right, if we're going to do other takeaways, though, from the few players that we have had the ability to talk to for the end-of-season wrap-ups, we also heard from Jacob Slavin. And for some folks, we'll just dive right into it. For the people who want to say that sports has no part of politics, or politics has no part of sports, you're wrong, because politics has always played a role of sports. The first Olympics were basically, we're going to show you how much better our people are than everybody else. Our athletes are greater. And then you can point to that throughout history. You know, the Olympics in Berlin before World War II, that was basically all tied to politics. There have been boycotts and everything.
Well, and if we want to, I mean, this isn't even in, it, to me, isn't an issue of politics. It shouldn't be an issue.
Well, it shouldn't
politics.
Be. But people want is when they. I understand people
just
are tuning
like
into the
wearing these
this a mask. You're mask, holding up a mask. No, I agree. It's
a
not
video
it's,
portion.
It's a It's a member of, that's a matter of courtesy, if you're asking me. But I bring this up because it has been something that was brought up. It impacts hockey. It impacts hockey players. And Jacob Slavin talked about what the NHL did, or at the time they didn't do the night before, which was take games off after what happened. And we can run down, you know, the myriads of reasons why things need to be better and need to change. But as far as sports go, I will never have an issue with athletes doing what they feel is right. And if that means not playing the game, then don't play the game. If that means playing the game, what I have an issue with is when people try to take one example and try to fit it into a story they want to fit. Like, well, Brett Favre played the day that his dad passed away. That's not the same. It's just not, folks. It's really not. And for Jacob Slavin, who was asked about what the NHL should have done, the most qualified member of the Carolina Hurricanes to do that, because he and his wife adopted a beautiful daughter who happens to be black in Emerson, and he was asked about it, and he gave his answers. And what I loved from Jacob Slavin was his one answer is, it's hard to see what's happening in the country right now, and it's hard to live with the fact that Emerson is going to grow up in this world. We want to see change happen. There's a long way to go. And then he adds, you got to have a change of heart. And that's it. So, folks, if you can have an opinion on something, athletes certainly can have an opinion on something, just so we're all clear.
Yeah.
Because they are human beings at the end of the day. They don't exist only when you turn on the TV or show up at a rink. They are human beings with a lot on their minds, too.
Yeah, and I can't believe I'm going to quote Brad Marchand, but he had a pretty good quote about it, too, and saying that, look, he basically said, you know, tough if you don't like that we're taking, you know, a couple of days off to pause and reflect, you know, tough luck, because that's what's happening. And I thought that was kind of a perfect summation of the atmosphere right now and why it's important to pause and reflect in a time like this. Athletes right now are realizing, and it started with the NBA. It started with the NBA, and it's continued through the WNBA, the MLB, professional tennis, MLS. They sort of took the lead on all of this. The NHL was sort of a day late in reacting.
Yes. No, they were. Not sort of. They were.
But kudos to them for you know, realizing the steps they could take in you know, having these important conversations and being a part of these important conversations. And athletes are realizing what sort of power they have right now. And what power they have is to initiate these conversations, to encourage progress and to promote change. And that's really the most important part of this, is the actionable things that that athletes can do to help make the world a better place for everybody. And so for the NHL to get involved, and you know, it is a predominantly white sport.
Yes.
And Jacob Slavin is a white defenseman on a team that is all white.
Yes.
And I do think, you know, bringing Emerson into his life and into Kylie's life has changed his perspective on a lot of stuff. Not just the, and that's not saying that that he it's exposed him to a new world.
Yes.
And opened his eyes to experiences that he wouldn't have otherwise had. And so for him to you know, to really sense the adoption of Emerson in mid-April of last year, to really take that time and to listen to conversations that black people are having, and to try to educate himself on these issues and better himself, is something I think we can all learn from and appreciate, and try to do better ourselves.
Yeah. And again, this is, I get, for a lot of people, there are issues, topics you don't want to get into, you do want to get into. Did I want to watch hockey those two nights that they didn't play? Sure, I want to watch it. But at the same time, do I want there to be changes? Do I want things to be better? Do I want tomorrow to be better than today for everybody? Yeah, that's what I want. And if 2 days of taking off hockey can generate a conversation for people out there that you never would have had, and it's an uncomfortable conversation for a lot of people, I get that. But if somebody out there picked up the phone and called a friend and said, what am I missing? What do I need to know? Why do I need to know that this is important? And you have that conversation. Even if you have your thoughts and your ideologies, at least to have it and go down. That's to me what it was all about. Does it change everything? Are we a utopia today? No, we're not, but it's change takes time, folks. Yep. But Jacob Slavin and his comments, if you haven't read it, Michael Smith put out an article that you can read at CarolinaHurricanes.com about it. There's a great article on The Athletic about it, about him adopting Emerson.
Ryan Clark, who is the Avalanche beat writer, a tremendous writer, and he penned a long-form piece on Jacob and Kylie and Emerson and just, you know, their life experience since adoption. So, yeah, if you have a subscription to The Athletic, be sure to read that. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, it's well worth it.
Yeah.
It's a great article.
Borrow your friends and read it.
Yeah, or that.
Yeah, just saying.
Won't tell anybody.
No, I'm not going to tell anybody.
You can read my article for free, but it's not as in-depth.
It's not long form, no. But I just wanted to get to that because it was, since we've last talked, this is something that happened. And, you know, we're a hockey podcast at the core of it. And, you know, putting our cards on the table, I had no issue with the NHL taking pause. Might have had a slight issue that they didn't have the full read on the room the night things were happening. But also, like I said, I can understand. I try to look at things from both, you know, why you would do something, why you wouldn't do something. You know, you're going into a game, you're going into a locker room. One game was being played when you found out that the NBA and the Milwaukee Bucks were like, no, we're not playing.
Right.
And then the other team is like, okay, so what are, do we not play? Do we play? You know, that's a conversation. You're trying to make that in 30 minutes to try to figure that out.
Yeah.
I think that the league could have taken it out of the players' hands.
Yeah.
If we're going to be honest.
Well, but I do appreciate the fact that it did come, that it was a player-driven initiative the next day. And I think it speaks volumes that that guys like Kevin Shattenkirk, you know, reached out to Ryan Reeves, you know, from the Toronto bubble to the Edmonton bubble and wanted to have a conversation. And that's then the next day, that's when the conversation started. The Hockey Diversity Alliance got involved. And the players talked about, you know, what they should do, what they could do to really continue that conversation. And then to have, you know, the press conference from Edmonton with all the players standing in solidarity was, I think, a huge step forward, I think, for this league.
And again, if anybody tuning into this podcast and if, you know, you're like, hey, get back to sports, stick to sports. I used to love that one a lot. What are you talking about this? Talk about the sports. If the NHL taking that time off led to just 10 conversations, that's 10 more than what we would have had without it. So in my mind, I could go two nights without hockey for somebody to pick up the phone or a conversation to happen to be a change agent. And, you know, that's tough, but that was it. And again, two great stories about Jacob Slavin because I hate to say it, but sometimes you get disappointed. And I've learned long ago, never read the comments, never read the comments. Hey. But then you read the comments and then you get disappointed in some people. But if it led to some people having a conversation they would not have had, I'm for two nights without hockey. We went 4 months without it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we can.
Two more nights.
We can press pause on a couple of. Yeah, couple of nights.
And the way that the schedule was being compressed there in the bubble, you know what? Maybe somebody get a little bit healthier, and maybe we get a better game out of it. But
and how about all the series now being?
That's what I was going to transition
3-1.
Into.
3-1.
Well done. That's a
genre
for you.
Interesting.
I'm just want to hit all of the buttons because normally I'm not near that, so I get to do it today.
Yeah, all series are 3-1. I would not be surprised to see all series end 4-1, ending game 5.
Yep.
You know, because again, we talked about on last podcast the psychological effects of being in the bubble, and you start thinking about home, and you know, by the time it gets to 3-1, that's a pretty monumental task to have to really work your way out of. So some surprises, I think. I did not expect Dallas to be up 3-1 on the Colorado Avalanche. I expected the Avs and the Golden Knights to play each other in what I was going to think was going to be a scintillating Western Conference final. Now it's going to be the Stars and the Knights is what it looks like, unless the Avs can...
Dynamite use of scintillating, by the way.
But yeah, the Dallas Stars, Anton Khudobin, a win away from the Western Conference Final.
Yes. Dobie, if you will.
Yes. The Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, I thought I was going to get a song out of it.
I wasn't going to. Not going to start singing now. The Tampa Bay Lightning, after losing game one, have rallied back with force.
Hi.
And, you know, like we talked about last week, I don't see them losing before the Stanley Cup final. I think they're coming out of the East.
If we talk about the psychological plays of being in the bubble, I think if a series is 2-2, you see everybody dig in. I think the most pivotal game now in all of these series is game number four. And I know we could do the case of, no, the most important game is the one you're playing tonight. But game four, because you're either going to be 2-2 after game four or 3-1. And if it gets to 3-1.
Well, assuming it's 2-1 going into game four, but
It should be 2-1 going into game four because you have three games played.
It could be 3-0.
Well, if it's 3-0, say goodnight. Yeah. But I'm referring to how if it's game four, well, of course game four is pivotal if it's 3-0 because you're probably on the way out anyway. Yeah. You've really got the bags packed at 3-0 versus. Yeah. But the point I'm trying to make, well done, thank you. It's not the best in the business for no reason right there. It's the Web's Michael Smith, everybody.
Hi.
There you go.
Tip my cap to everybody there.
To yourself and for the video portion.
Yeah.
The point I'm saying is in a 2-1 series.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree.
Game four
becomes
the, for me, all right, if the team that's trailing wins it, we have a series. But now heading into game five, if you're that team that's down 3-1, like, do I want to spend another 3-4 days in the bubble? We can go home. You know, we've been here, and I hate this, but again, back to what I had already talked about. These are humans. In that draw to go home and to be with your family, I think gets pretty strong right now.
Yeah, because it's been over a month now that these teams have been there. And, you know, we can look back at game four of the Boston series, and the Hurricanes were, you know, 13 minutes away from a 2-2 series. And then that it becomes a whole new series at that point.
Yeah.
But instead, it swings majorly in Boston's favor. It becomes a 3-1 series, and that's basically it.
How many series that have gone 3-1 have actually made it to a sixth game?
This year? I don't think any have. Yeah,
I mean, that I hate to go with that's the example I'm pointing to, but that's the example I'm pointing to.
I think that's the case. Not that I can think of. Luke Dukak had he pulled the numbers on elimination game stats, and it's a huge swing of the team that's moving on is going to win most of the time.
Yeah,
60% of the time.
It works all the time. Not going to lie, that doesn't make any sense. I was told there'd be no math, by the way.
But, yeah.
But game four, yes, game four is the pivotal game in this series. And now that you get to game five, I'm going to be really surprised if the Boston Bruins and Colorado Avalanche push this to the Bruins, a game six.
The Bruins are done. That was the other thing, is they're a beatable team. Despite how talented they are, despite that top line, not they are a beatable team.
But not having Tuukka Rask in this series, I think
100%.
This is where it shines a little bit more than what it did in the Canes series. Absolutely. With the Boston Bruins.
Well, and that was the other frustrating part, is like, if the Hurricanes can generate more shots on Yaroslav Halak, I mean, you saw some of the goals that he gave up.
Oh, right? Yeah.
It's that was the other frustrating part.
That's why game four was so frustrating. Yep. It was there. You could have broken Halak, and then that series goes down a different road. But Tampa Bay looks really good in the East. And
the Islanders, Barry Trotz has them dialed in. I don't think they're going to be able to match up well against the Lightning, though. The Lightning are just they're too good, and they're mad about last year.
If you don't get the first goal on the Islanders, they just never come out of that system. Even if you tie it, they don't come out of that system. They are comfortable, and playoff hockey is really about this, and this is going to sound weird to folks, despite what Dallas is doing out west, scoring 5 goals every game now. Playoff hockey is, are you comfortable winning a 2-1 hockey game? And the Islanders are the most comfortable team in the NHL at trying to win a 2-1 hockey game.
They've got good goaltending, too.
Both Semyon Varlamov and Thomas Greiss can give them what they need. But also the system in front of them.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
But the Islanders, really, the first goal against the Islanders is, or the first goal in the game for the Islanders is the key to whatever they do, because they don't like to chase. They want to. They want
to
sit in the lead.
Chase.
Nope. But a couple of guys have raised their game to the next level. For Philly, I think this is a learning experience for them too. You know, this is a team that I think they're ahead of schedule. They have some older pieces. I get that in Claude Giroux and Jacob Voracek, but Carter Hart. This is his first time going through this in the Nets. It's they're learning from this. They'll be better off for it. And again, they ran into a machine, a team that doesn't come out of their system. Out west, by the way, if it isn't Colorado, I don't want to write off the Dallas Stars. I really don't. But Vegas, despite what agent Alan Walsh is posting, that is a distraction on Twitter.
Yeah.
Never read the comments. But despite that, Vegas looks like they're not to be trifled with.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a good team. And I don't see again, the only team I saw being able to match up decently well against them was Colorado, and now that Colorado's running into the buzzsaw that is the Dallas Stars.
It'll be interesting, though, if Colorado does win tonight, though. Because what I'm saying here on August 31st on a Monday, you know, Colorado can upset that apple cart for me with my point about how game number four was key.
But they could.
Colorado, of the teams that are down 3-1, Colorado's the one team that I could be like, okay, they could rip off three in a row.
Yeah.
If they want to.
Yeah. We'll see.
I know what we're saying, if we want to. But it goes back to the mindset.
Two series in the first round went to six games. And I don't think any of them were 3-1 at the time. I could be wrong.
That sounds right to me.
I've wiped my memory.
I'm not going to fact check it. We're at R&D Brewing.
We are at R&D
Enjoying Brewing. The Canescast, the podcast, and Storm Brew, which is just 97 calories. Storm Brew, the official sponsor of the Canescast. It is a crisp, light, refreshing beverage that you can pick up at any of your favorite grocery stores. You can get it at Costco if you want. Again, 97 calories. How many carbs?
2.4 per serving.
You know what that makes it?
Crushable.
And?
Crispy.
Absolutely.
And delicious.
Hi.
And it's brewed by award-winning brewmaster Ian Van Gundy. And we spoke with him at length about, what went into this, the process of brewing Storm Brew, because it was very quick. It was a quick process in the summer of 2019.
Yes.
We also talk with them about some new seltzer flavors R&D has, and much more.
So if I can, for our good friend.
This is Bill Bernstein coming to you live from the Canes locker room.
Billy, normally we tell you to check out. You want to stay and listen to this.
Yeah, you want to stay and listen to this because this is a guy who is committed to his craft and who...
He wins the day.
Yeah, he comes in here every day and goes 1-0. And Billy, you'll appreciate that. Here he is, Ian Van Gundy. Well, we've got a serious treat today. We're joined here by brewmaster Ian Van Gundy at R&D Brewing. Ian, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a long commute here to the studio, but glad to be here.
Well, I was going to say, when Michael usually says it's a pleasure, this really is because
it's actually a pleasure.
I was going to say, if you haven't figured out by now, we are at R&D Brewing here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And basically, it's Ian's laboratory, and we enjoy that immensely. And, Michael and I, it's no secret, we enjoy beverages, including Storm Brew, 97 calories, crisp, light, refreshing lager, 4.2% when it comes to that, 2.4 carbs.
2.4 carbs per serving.
But 4.2 on the ABV, which is a crushable beer. And one of the questions that we have had for you for a long time, how did you get this beer so crispy? Because, I mean, when you hear that term, it really is, you crack it open, it's crisp, it's refreshing, it doesn't sit. You can have another one and feel, okay, I can have another one. And like, oh, I got to brace myself for some beer now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a rare thing that you get from a craft brewery, even if that's what they're claiming you're going to have. And I've always felt like this was a segment that needed to be hit a little bit better from local breweries. When I see my old friends from high school over the holidays, they'll sample some of my IPAs, but then they still have their case of something from large brewery that they'll drink through the night because they can keep drinking it.
Yep.
And so that was when I decided to try to make this happen.
Well, the one thing, and just to piggyback off of that, Ian, I don't think people, like the average beer drinker, understands how hard it is to make a lager. Like everybody, well, that's what the big beers are, so it must be easy. But lager is actually one of, from my understanding, one of the harder beers to kind of perfect and get out there to get to the notes that you want it to taste like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hear the, you know, there's less, you know, hops to hide behind, which is absolutely true, but even lager yeast takes twice as long to ferment. It needs to stay cold in the tank for an extended period of time, so we even have to sacrifice, you know, our throughput by doing a lager instead of an ale, which we spoke about at length when we developed this recipe and decided that it was the right beer and we're going to make it work.
Yeah, so let's talk more about that, the sort of the genesis behind Stormbrew, because this was an incredibly fast process last summer, in the summer of 2019, from kind of conception to reality. So take everybody through just how you arrived at what we're drinking today.
Sure. We, you know, it was hard to decide what is one recipe or one beer that's going to capture such a large audience. I feel like now today, I mean, the reason breweries have eight beers is because it just takes more than one beer. So we had to just make the most sound decision possible. So I created a few test batches. We compared some hoppier ales, which are, you know, we know are going to sell well through grocery stores. IPAs tend to be the number one seller, but at the same time, you know, we've got the large lagers, macro brewed lagers, as the top selling beers, you know, at PNC. So that crowd is obviously needs, you know, we can't leave them out. So I attempted to make a light ale with some hop aroma that would still be have the drinkability of the existing Storm Brew, and then I did more, just my best crack at a light lager. I took in beers brewed by other craft breweries in this segment, as well as I went and grabbed, I think, 24-ounce cans, like every single one I could find at the grocery store of all your big names, and we ran analytical data on all of these beers. We, you know, ran them through our lab to understand their carbonation levels, their densities, their ABVs, their carbohydrates. What I found was the craft brewers' light beers were still much heavier. So we did a tasting once I created the recipe, and we had a vote that was about 50-50. And it was yep. Yeah. And I mean, we would all kind of make a decision and then sleep on it, and the next morning everyone's mind would change. So it was painful to eventually come to this decision, but I'm really happy with this beer.
I was going to say, how much research and testing did it take for you to come up with what we're drinking today, as opposed to, you know, people think, oh, you just throw everything into the vat and out comes beer. How many different samples, how many different variations of Storm Brew did you go through? Or was it sometimes, is there lightning in a bottle, like the first time through, we're like, this could be it?
Luckily, because this didn't take a lot of different recipe decisions, because there's not a lot of leniency in this style. You know, I'm not going to throw some crazy hops in it. So the base ingredients never did change. It was really about dialing in the getting the consistency of the body of it, the bitterness of it, and then also like the lagering. We ended up, as we brewed a few batches, we're now lagering it even longer and spending more time in the tanks than like the first test batch. And we've just found that as we do that, the aroma cleans out, and it really just improves and makes it a beer that you can drink several of, because there's no, you know, character that's kind of lingering there.
So crispy, Michael.
Oh, it's incredibly crispy. And it's a fascinating process, too, to consider it from, you know, conception to reality.
To consumption.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And how it all comes together. Based on the feedback that you've received from Canes fans and people who have enjoyed the beverage, how happy are you with how this final product has turned out?
Well, I feel like we did. We hit the demographic that we intended to, and that was one of the big questions for me. Was, you know, will your light lager drinker drink a different brand? Even if you gave them their favorite beer and repackaged it, would they drink it if it's a different package? And I feel like now watching how it's sold at the arena, as well as you know, in the off premise. I mean, people are picking up cases of this regularly. And I don't know of many craft breweries in the country that have pulled that off. So it's pretty exciting.
Well, Ian, on that end, you want every beer you make, everybody to enjoy. You know, it's never like, I don't think, maybe when you're playing around at home like this, I'm going to make this is for me and if nobody likes it. But Stormbrew was really, you need to make a beer that everybody, like you said, is going to want, going to drink because of that. Was that daunting when they came to you and said, this is what we want you to do? Or are you like, oh, yeah, let's see if I can make this. How did you view that when they're like, and oh, by the way, you probably have, if I got the timeline right, you probably got about 3.5-4 weeks to make something to get ready to go.
The timeline was tough. I think I just buried my fears and went for it, though. I am known for my light beers in this area, so I felt like you know, if someone was going to do it, then that person is me. So I did kind of feel like it was my calling. I better just make it work. So
I think you did. There's no doubt about that, at least for our end. And like we said, you talk about, like, challenges rose up to it, and that's why we're enjoying a light, crispy, refreshing Stormbrew.
It's so tasty. And actually, a quick Twitter question for you from Dustin, who asks, is there any possibility of the 16-ounce cans being distributed or sold outside of the arena? Or is that above your pay grade?
Yeah, I'm not the person here to ask for that specifically.
But we'll put in a good word.
We love selling beer, so yeah. If there's places to put it, I believe right now you're not going to see them in many places because they were specifically for the arena.
Yep.
And so all of our agreements with other off-premise is with mostly the cases.
Right. And I enjoy going to Costco and
yep.
Target and, you know, wherever.
Local, your local grocery store.
Seeing the cases of Stormbrew there. And it's a great can design, too, which yeah. I think, again, not really your department, but the way it integrates with the rest of the R&D look, I think is really cool.
And one of the highlights for me, I was in a local grocery store. And as you know, you've met Jordan Martinook,
absolutely, who
quite enjoys a Stormbrew responsibly. And it was the cardboard. It was the cardboard cutouts, and it was get your picture, you know, with your Stormbrew. Yep. Well, for whatever reason, the grocery store I was at didn't have it. But I was walking through, and a Canes fan was there, and goes, "Can I get my picture with you if the Jordan isn't here?" And they were holding up Stormbrew. So the fact that it's been met with a lot of open arms from a as you know, sports fans are a tough fan base. This absolutely. Is what we like, and we stay with it. What does it do when you hear people say, hey, we really like it? Michael was up in Toronto in the bubble for the playoffs, and fans were asking, can you ship Stormbrew up to us? And this is Canada, which they take their beer seriously. It's got to make you feel good, doesn't it?
Yeah, we get messages from all over the place. Our Facebook is tied to my phone, so I'm at home, and I constantly see, hey, will you ship Stormbrew to blah, blah, blah? I was just at a neighbor's place the other day, and they said, man, it's got to feel good to see your brand out there, I mean, on TV. And sometimes I don't think about it until someone mentions it. And, yeah, I mean, it is pretty crazy, really.
Do you want to talk about some other beers now? Some other delicious R&D products?
Yes.
Yeah, because I'm just looking at the list of beers that you guys brew, and there's not a bad one on the list. They're all delicious in their own manner. The low-cal resolution ale, the low-calorie ale, is that sort of like, how would you describe that? Is that sort of an ale cousin of Stormbrew, like a light, refreshing ale?
Sure. The base, like nutritional facts or criteria to be in that space of like low-carb, low-calorie is a pretty specific recipe. You can't really stray from it without increasing carbs and calories. So if you look at some of those technical specs of Stormbrew or low-cal or any other low-calorie beers we have, it is going to be, I think they're always going to be like, you know, right around high 90s to 100 calories, 4.2%. So then it's just a matter of how do you want to flavor that. So in the case of Stormbrew, it is, you know, very much a traditional lager. Yet another space, I will claim that we were one of the first to do the low-calorie IPA, but this is more of an IPA or a hoppy style. I laugh about that because so many low-calorie IPAs came out that summer, but we did it in January.
Yeah.
Another complaint I hear of when I go out and talk to people is, yeah, I love craft beer, but right now I'm watching my calories, so yeah. They're drinking spirits When I hear that, and being a brewer and knowing the technical thing, I'm like, well, craft beer doesn't have to be higher calorie. We just like higher calorie right. beers, but I can make one that's low calorie. So, yep. so that's when I did that and made it hoppy for the craft beer drinker.
I was going to say, how much of it, especially when you come to a place like R&D, because, you know, you were known for making beer before you came here. Do you like that? You know, I can brew for myself, for my friends, or, you know, you have these ideas. I want to, almost like you're Willy Wonka with beer. That's how I would look at your job. It's like, I'm going to just try everything. And then we can decide, do we like this? Because Seven Saturdays IPA, it's funny, whenever we go out and there's Storm Brew and Seven Saturdays, I love Storm Brew, but I'm going to drink a Seven Saturdays on draft. I'm like, it's great. You have to try that. But how much of your decision-making is it's stuff you want to drink versus you're listening to what beer drinkers out there are saying or what they want?
Sure. I would say that especially the breweries that I've worked for and kind of what I, where my career has taken me is that the majority of it is doing what I think people are going to like,
yeah.
And seeing what are happening with the trends and just creating, beers to kind of, I don't want to say follow the trends, but more just follow consumer taste.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a trend, but you know, people start over time, they like their IPAs less bitter. Over time, they like more fruit flavor, and so trying to keep up with that and make beers that will appeal to these people is probably the primary. But we do have our R&D stuff that we do on the side as well, where sometimes we'll intentionally do something that's a little bit more, as we say, old school or stuff brewers like. Yeah. I really like dark amber malty lagers like Box or and there's a very strong fan base, especially in like the brewer home brewer yep. beer nerd world, where people are really going to appreciate that. But I know when I make that beer, our salespeople are going to sell one keg of that, and that bar is probably not going to order another one. So I can't make those beers all the time because we are doing this for a living, but luckily we are able to dabble a little bit.
Yeah. So I was going to say, you can run a few audibles when you want to, when you're making
right,
a beer.
Right.
Speaking of trends, and you mentioned, wanting to enjoy something with fewer calories. We've got seltzers. You're brewing, two new flavors of seltzers. You have the key lime seltzer, but you did tweak that recipe a bit, right?
Yeah. Our new key lime, it's just enhanced aroma. As we work on flavoring and learning about our base seltzer, just trying to, it's a whole new science. Being a brewer only mildly prepares you for brewing seltzer, and that at least you're tuned into what things smell like and taste like. But it's been a whole new science, a whole new understanding of, you can make it taste like lime, but does it smell like lime? Okay, so getting that aroma and flavor to come through has been a huge challenge, and key lime was our first. And so I did a new round of experimentation and found a lime combination that really works. So we're super excited about that, but also in the process, yes, made our tropical and our lemon raspberry flavors that are just now out.
Seltzers are, trying to take over the world. I'm still a beer guy, but what's the toughest part for the seltzer for you? Is it getting the seltzer, which in my mind I think would be the base, like you have to have, good water that you're going to work with, or is it getting the flavoring that you're going to put in? Because I've had some seltzers, if we're going to be honest, where I'm like, this just tastes like they added, some kind of just fake taste into this and calling it a seltzer because it's in seltzer water.
Sure. It's hard to say what's the hardest thing. One thing I've learned about seltzer is it has been hard all the way through.
I didn't mean to laugh, but well done.
It has been quite a learning experience. Every decision we make to try to improve it, we learn two more things that we should have known about that change. So it's been an incredible learning experience. I've been doing it for about a year and a half, and I would say that our most recent changes are finally like the aha moments. And so and it's to the point that I've only clung on to the processes that work. To like, I don't know how to do it any differently, because so far, if you do it differently, it's not going to work. So there's only one way that I know of to make seltzer. But getting that base is obviously really important. And it's not easy because You're essentially just trying to make vodka water, but we can't just add vodka to water. It is a fermented beverage. Yep. And fermentation also kicks off flavors. And wine, it's a myriad of flavors that pair well with the essence or the, you know, the character of the grape. And with beer, you might have fruity esters that play well with the hops. And with seltzer, you just want none of that so that you can just flavor it. And that is extremely challenging to do.
So how did you arrive? The tropical is a blend of orange, guava, and passion fruit.
Yep.
How did you arrive at that flavor combination?
So that is a known flavor combination, the Hawaiian drink Pog, which I've noticed there are more things coming. I feel like it's kind of a current flavor that I'm seeing more of. And it is a fantastic, like, it just gives you that tropical feeling. But the it was in that big, like, aroma and flavor combination. You know, like, the orange kind of helps the guava pop. The guava on its own is just kind of lacking. And so really when you – and I did make just straight passion fruit, orange, and guava seltzers when experimenting. Just to see, like, do I really need this combination? Maybe just passion fruit and guava. Maybe who needs orange? Yep. And what was funny is, as I played around with it and blended them, really the three together was better than any of them alone.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not the first person to create that flavor profile. But so I guess the Hawaiians got that one right.
Hey, it's you brought it to the mainland. Let's just look at it like right. that. That's the key right now. Ian Van Gundy is with us here on Canescast. He is the brewmaster for R&D Brewing.
Award-winning.
That should be known.
Had right?
I'm just, I'm had just throwing that. I'm just putting that out there for the listeners here of the podcast. But, you know, a lot of people think, and I'm sure it is, I just want to pick your brain on this. How much is coming to work every day fun? But then, like you say, you're going in. I'm sure that you've gone to sleep with something sitting in a fermentation barrel, and you don't sleep because you're like, oh, is this going to turn out when I get in there tomorrow morning? So is it like Christmas? Do you have fear with certain things? You know, what goes through a batch for you? Is a lot of fun, or is there a lot of, you know, you can overthink the process?
Yeah, the luckily with beer, and I joke about this, when we taste beer in the fermenter, it doesn't taste right until it's done. So anytime we make a new recipe, we like overanalyze how it tastes out of the fermenter, and we freak out the whole time. Where if it's a flagship that we make all the time, it also doesn't taste right while it's fermenting. But I just know better. I know where it's going to go, and it's fine. So so we tend to trick ourselves into freaking out. I would say, I mean, the last year, you know, I feel like our beers have, you know, are always getting better, and luckily I don't feel like it ever goes the other direction. So I've been pretty stress free on the beer side. But the seltzer, I mean, when and one thing about seltzers is unforgiving. So you make a beer, and it might not be everything you want. It's still pretty good. It's still beer. Maybe you make the hop aroma a little brighter the next time. If there's something wrong with the seltzer, people don't like it at all. Yeah. So the day, you know, with beer mostly throughout my career, it's been a lot of people are always positive. And with seltzer, you know, you try a flavor and it's not good, and everyone just tells you it's terrible. And I'm like, That's been hard for me because no one ever tells me that what I did all day is terrible, but until seltzer. So I stressed a lot about that in the earlier days trying to figure that out.
So what Ian is finding out, Ian's profession is an awful lot like being a professional athlete.
Right. If you have a bad day on the job publicly,
everyone's going to let
right.
you know about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, I mean, if you go to work at a desk job and you're programming something, you don't go to your neighbor's house later and they're like, man, what you did today was terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh.
I can't believe you coded like that. How dare you? What a terrible misstep. You put a one before two zeros? Do you even know binary?
Well, I enjoy all three of the seltzer flavors. I think they're delicious. Before we let you get out of here, there's some people can't see this. Obviously, it's a podcast, but
this isn't the video portion of the podcast.
There's a giant sheet up in the middle of this warehouse that we're in, and it's hiding some new plans for R&D Brewing. Some bigger tanks that you guys and when I say bigger tanks, they're massively bigger than what's currently in here. So what's next for R&D Brewing?
Yeah. So the other half of our building was We had a tenant in there for the last few years, and we have since taken that spot. And so our first thought was, okay, well, let's expand the brewery. So far, I feel like barely making it with production and sales. So having a little extra capacity gives you some breathing room. And we go over there, and there's a drop ceiling, and we say, okay, well, let's get rid of the drop ceiling. Let's put in some cool lighting. And we're like, it's probably 20 feet up there, and we take out the ceiling, and it's 26 feet. That's a big difference. It really is when you're looking at equipment. So what it allows us to do is pretty much just fill it up all the way to the ceiling and put in a pretty substantial expansion in there. So what that's going to do is it's going to, you know, allow some growth and more success with Stormbrew and be able to keep up with that, as well as I'd also think it's going to, right now our brew house is pretty small, and it's hard to justify doing anything that would need to wait longer, like putting it into barrels or, it's just you have to have capacity to brew something that you're not going to sell right away. So this is going to give us, I think, a lot more freedom to not only grow our markets, but to also grow our experimentation as well and make enough beer that we can get it out there and, you know, enough places that you can actually find it.
So there you go. Everybody wanting Stormbrew beyond North Carolina, maybe that's up to other people, but maybe that's the case. I do know this. You are a plus five today for your shift on the Canescast. We appreciate that. A couple of assists. And if you keep making beverages like this, I'm going to say this. You might make me a seltzer drink. Because I'm like, there's no way in... There's a way right now.
I will say I was not a seltzer drinker going into this, but you work hard enough on something, you appreciate it a little more. So I've been drinking a little more seltzer at home than I used to. That's for sure.
Those lemon raspberries and the tropicals, a six pack of those by the pool, great day. Great day.
Unfortunately, a six pack only lasts like maybe a couple hours.
Yeah, exactly. Really easy to drink.
A couple hours.
I stretched that one a little bit. I didn't want to admit the truth. maybe an hour.
Ian, thanks so much for taking the time and joining
us. Thanks,
guys. Thank you.
Oh, excellent to chat with Ian. First time having a
non-hockey
person on the podcast. We're branching out here on Canescast.
But if we found out, I love the seltzer conversation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if people don't like it, they're quick to tell them.
Yeah, so I got to come here last week and taste test the seltzers. So they've got the key lime, which was the original seltzer, but they've tweaked the recipe, so it's got more of an aroma now. And the flavor, I think, is very good. But they've added two new flavors. Tropical, which is a blend of orange, guava, and passion fruit. And lemon raspberry, and both are just delicious. They both, the aromas on both are very pleasing. And you could, take a cooler of them out to the beach and just have a wonderful day.
I am not a seltzer guy. I believe I said this at the start of this podcast.
You did. You told me on the way over, actually.
During the interview with Ian Van Gundy, I sampled the key lime and the passion fruit. They're tasty.
Yeah.
And
they're very good.
The passion fruit kind of became my favorite. Wasn't tropical. Thinking that.
Yeah.
The tropical. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that blend of orange, passion fruit, and guava.
You're a big cruise guy, so I can imagine you enjoy, passion fruit and guava. I enjoy going to Hawaii. Only been there once, but I really enjoyed it.
I would love to go.
And experience the islands. Oh, you need to go.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, so check out those new seltzer flavors. They're just hitting stores now. Again, you'll find them wherever you find Stormbrew, all major retailers with new store locations added daily.
Thank you.
And they're delicious. Really, if you've had any of R&D's core beers, Seven Saturdays.
Speaking of that, I'm going to go get a, you want a refill? I'm going to
that
right now.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have a refill. Hang
Thank
on.
You.
Thank you.
If you've had any of their core beers, the Seven Saturdays, the Riviera Mexican Lager, the Local Resolution, and the Stormbrew, I mean, they're all very fine, tasty beverages that you can enjoy at all locations. Scalco having a little trouble pouring the Stormbrew over there. A little foamy. The video portion is really seeing him struggle pour the Stormbrews. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Cheers. So if you like the podcast and you like some Stormbrew, hopefully you're enjoying this podcast with a can of Stormbrew by your side. If not, what are you even doing? This podcast is better when you have when you pair it with a Stormbrew. It's also better for us to do it with a Stormbrew
like
in hand.
I feel I just struggled on yours. So.
Yeah, yours.
It was a new, it was the pleats.
Wouldn't you agree that this podcast is better when we have Stormbrews?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's I not agree even too. Close, my friend.
All right, let's get to some questions here before we get...
Oh, I was going to get to...
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, of course you did.
Yeah, I don't have
so,
to.
So, yeah, shocking on that one. Here's mine. The Tampa Bay Lightning will win the Stanley Cup.
Take it. Yep,
done. I was even going to throw, and it won't. They won't play any series that go past five games.
Yeah, they might, but no, they're winning the cup.
Okay.
It's you know, it's Virginia. It's the Virginia Revenge Tour.
It is. It really is.
That's exactly what it is. So they had that Columbus series on their mind down to the day, and it just so happened that they drew them in the first round after that round robin, and they, you know, they didn't.
They didn't because Columbus totally gave him a series. Them. Columbus gave him a series.
Columbus gave him a fight, and that's to be expected from a team coached by John Tortorella. But Tampa just they took over. They took over, and they showed that they're one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, one of the top teams in the league. And I see them winning the Stanley Cup.
All right,
taking
so
that.
We have now. Do you want to get to the questions?
Oh yeah, let's get to.
Oh well, we also have a we have a like it keep it from that guy Chip.
Oh perfect. Oh yes, who I also, can use this one.
Who also is our resident comic book nerd, and I have no problem with that. So that guy Chip.
Hi.
Thank you for being our comic book nerd. He corrected me on what episode Batman appeared in Detective Comics.
Oh, great! I wouldn't have known.
I thought it was issue number one, but it was I believe number 27.
There you
he
go.
Said as he looks down his nose.
So this from Chip. If you like it, take it. If not, send it back. Whether or not Williams decides to return to play next season is more about physical readiness and less about mental readiness than it was last season.
I'll send that back.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's a mental decision. Not if he knows how to get himself in shape for a season.
Yeah.
It's the in between the ears. Do you want to go through the things it takes to play a season?
I mean, I almost think you need the mental side in order to get to the physical side. It's not a question of if he can get to the physical side. It's that part has been established. But if you're not mentally there, then I don't think the physical side follows. But I do think you need to have one to have the other. So I guess am I sending it back? I think I'm sending,
yeah,
it,
sending
back.
It back.
Okay.
Because I think he's, if we're reading it correctly, Chip, you're pointing that it's more towards his physical readiness. And I think it's more towards the mental side.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
All right. Here's one from Raven. This is actually for you, Scalco. Ooh. Was there a delay on the broadcast for you when calling the games in the playoffs, or was it a live feed?
No, there was a delay, believe it or not.
Was it 7 seconds?
There was. I was a little bit more ahead of what you would see at home. A little bit, because then what we were broadcasting was delayed. But we had our statistician, who is Mr. Lee Taft. Oh, by the way, Raven.
Hi.
The president, Lee Taft, he actually had another monitor where he keeps track of the stats. So scoring chances, shots on goals, things like that, penalties lets us know. He was about 2 seconds ahead of what I was watching. So he knew goals were happening before I did.
Cheating.
So, yeah, there were delays abound, Raven.
Yeah, and apparently I was like, I don't know, way ahead of the television broadcast, which is to be expected, I guess, because I'm in arena. I had a number of people saying, like, oh, you spoiled the goal for me. Sorry about that.
Well,
just quick fingers, I guess.
Good for you.
This from Alex Hamilton. Can you guys recommend any good hockey books?
Hi.
You're just running right through the names right now, my friend. Yeah, there are a couple. There are a few good ones. There's, if you're a Wayne Gretzky fan, 99 Stories of the Game. Is a good one. I actually did some research on this. There's one that's just simply called The Game, and it's by Ken Dryden, the former Montreal goaltender in the 70s. That's really, really good. I mean, I guess it all depends on, like, what kind of book are you looking for, like overall hockey or about the players. The one about Bobby Orr is Orr, my story, is phenomenal. I'm a huge Bobby Orr fan. It's a really, really great book to read. Everybody, if you're an American, The Boys of Winter, The Untold Story of a Coach, a Dream, and the 1980 U.S. Olympic Hockey Team. The Miracle on Ice, basically, is what that chronicles, and that's a good read, too.
Yeah, there's one called The Instigator, How Gary Bettman Remade the League and Changed the Game Forever. That's a good read as well. Just kind of overviews his sort of rise to commissioner and what he's done for the game since. I think a very balanced look at what he's been able to accomplish for the league. So that's a good read, a good overview of really what steps the NHL has taken under Gary Bettman.
Yeah. So those are just a couple for you to get into. And I mean, it all depends on, like, are you looking for like player stories or are you looking for an overarching thing about the game? There's so many books about the Stanley Cup that are out there and some of the absolutely zany stories that go through it. I had a book when I was a kid and I cannot remember it. And I've tried to look it up. It's like the wonderful, wacky stories of the Stanley Cup, how it's been lost like 30 times over the years. It was lost for a full year. It ended up being a flower pot for a maid who, you know, saw the Stanley Cup sitting in some guy's kitchen and thought, oh, that'd be a nice flower pot. And she took it home.
It's an awesome
and it was like just pot. And it was just sitting in a window. And like somebody walked by it one day and went, I think that's the Stanley Cup. lots of
discovery.
Stories. Yeah, lots of stories where it ended up in certain places where it shouldn't have. If I can ever remember the name of that book, because I've tried looking it up and I cannot find it. And it was more of a, I read it when I was a kid. Like when I say kid, like middle school age. So I have not been able to find it since then.
I don't think I've completely blocked out middle school from my memory. It's a terrible time in schooling history.
Middle school was all right.
Yeah.
High school could have been a little bit better.
And
but then you look back on it and you're like, it could have been better.
I don't know how, if there are any middle school teachers listening to this podcast, well done. I don't know how you deal with middle schoolers.
Middle school was all right. It was all right for me.
Well, yeah, but I just, you know, being a teacher dealing with kids going through puberty and stuff just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Really, if you're a teacher in general, well done.
Yes, you absolutely. You
deserve much, much praise.
A raise, kudos.
Yeah.
Everything we can give you. This from Sparty Bill, Mr. Spartan.
Hi.
What do you see as the most glaring holes prior to next season? And is there any kind of signing strategy for this offseason to best influence how to protect as many of our players prior to the expansion draft? Or has this been asked already? Well, it's been asked already. Again, stop worrying about the expansion draft. I think we found out after what happened with Vegas, just stop worrying about it. Just, yeah. I mean, because you're not going to lose five players. You're going to lose one.
I mean, you do have to. Yeah, there are people in the Hurricanes front office considering, you know,
everything.
You know, what is going to happen in the expansion draft, but it's not going to drive the team's offseason strategy to any extent.
It's not like you're going to lose Andrei Svechnikov.
No,
and you can't lose Marty Natchez because last season,
correct,
he played down in the AHL, so you don't have to worry about protecting him. Are you going to lose a good player? Absolutely, you are. I mean, maybe. That's just, well, no, I think that's it because I don't think we're going to see teams make the deals that Vegas was making where, all right, you select this guy and we'll give you a draft pick, you know, instead. And I think the teams kind of realize, no, if we've got somebody in our system, we'll let him go if he's not here yet or,
yeah,
you know, where he's at. So you just have to be prepared to lose a good player. But I don't, you know, when people keep asking this, like, what's the fear? If I asked you this, Smitty, what is the fear of what player gets lost to Seattle in the expansion draft? Who do you think would be, oh my goodness, we can't lose him, if you're a Canes fan or the Canes front office?
I think all those players are protected, so exactly.
So that's it. Yep. And look, there might be somebody down in the minors who's really good. You know, we're talking, but it won't be a player like Jake Bean. He's not eligible, right? He hasn't been called up yet.
I think he might be eligible, yeah.
All right, then if it's Jake Bean, then it's Jake Bean. But he hasn't played for the Hurricanes yet.
Yeah.
So
it's something to worry about next offseason because, again, the roster is going to look different than it looks now. And so who you're able to protect and all of that might change between now and then. So,
And I don't think you sign a guy with the sole intent of, we signed him to make him available to Seattle. No, yeah, you try to make your team as...
Not the sole intent, but you could sign them, say, to a two-year deal.
Yes, I get it in the back of your mind. But you're not going to sign a guy who can't help your team win.
Right.
That's what I'm driving at.
It's the Hurricanes don't have the cap luxury to just sign a guy to expose them in the expansion draft.
Exactly. They're not going to sign Michael Smith to a two-year deal so they can expose him to the Seattle Kraken.
Though
Seattle would take you
if they were open to it, I'm also open to it.
You'd be the first pick that I would take if you were left open for that.
I think I can make a call to a guy.
Why not? So there you go, Sparty Bill. Hope that answers your question. I got another one, or do you want to get to this?
This one from David Schley.
Hi.
Before the playoffs started, a lot was made about how deep the Canes' D was. As a former defenseman, I focus on the D a lot when watching hockey. I saw a lot of fundamental defensive mistakes that led to goals. Thoughts on the current D situation? That seems to be kind of a loaded question. I don't think...
I'm looking at you before I jump on this one.
I don't think the
Canes... I'm not just going to jump on any D.
I don't think the Canes' defense was the reason they're not still playing hockey.
Watching the postseason, I saw the mistakes that I expected to see from teams that hadn't played hockey in 4.5 months.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's totally fair.
So, I mean, yeah, I think we saw a couple of, you know, passes here, you know, guys maybe
you saw
out of position a little bit more than what they would be had this been a normal playoff and you'd been playing 82 games and, you know, you're a little bit more letter tight with what you need to do. I think that the games were a little bit more loose as expected. That's what I expected. But when you talk about the thoughts on the current D situation, there's really not much the Canes are able to do as far as, you know, any big changes that we're talking about on the blue line. Because you have Jacob Slavin, you have Dougie Hamilton, you have Brett Pesce, you have Brady Shea, then you've got Jake Gardner. Those five guys are under contract for next year.
Yep.
100%. And then you have Jake Bean. You've got to make a decision on Hayden Fleury, who is a restricted free agent.
Yep.
You have to make a decision on Joel Edmondson. You have to make a decision on Trevor Van Riemsdyk and a decision on Sammy Vatanen.
Yep.
So five of your six are already taken care of. And you played this postseason, and if you were watching David Schley, I've heard them all, just so you're saying. To that end, David, remember, they were playing without Brett Pesce, too.
Yeah.
One of their top defensive defensemen.
Yep.
So, I mean, but every mistake, you watch, I watch Victor Hedman make mistakes. I watch Zdeno Chara make mistakes, you know, in this postseason.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can run down the list. It's not the crispest hockey. The hockey's way better than I thought it was going to be. I thought we were going to see a lot of pond hockey, and we saw a lot more structure to it. But I think the defense is fine. I think it's deep. There are players that are out there, and there's more to come, certainly, when you talk about this organization and through the draft and what else will happen. But I think Michael and I addressed it. If you look at this team, the one guy who is not sure to be back – we both feel they need is a Joel Edmondson, that kind of player.
Yep.
So I hope that answers your question. It's a good question. I mean, he played defense somewhere, so I'm sure he's got an eye for what he was watching. But I also think that when you go looking for things, you can find them.
An eye for D?
Yeah. Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
Yep. This from Josh Holdner.
Hi.
Thoughts on Frederik Andersen? You want to start?
He's a goaltender.
He plays for the Maple Leafs.
He's Swedish.
He was a former Carolina Hurricanes draft pick.
Mm. And he looks like Ed Sheeran.
Oh, he does. He does. Wasn't counting on that one, but it worked.
Thank you.
Yeah, there it is.
Yep. I thought the rim shot was actually perfect on that one, though.
But he does actually look
like... He does look like Ed Sheeran. He
dressed as Ed Sheeran for Halloween.
Yes. And he's in love with your body.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this question obviously stems from Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts, which is a column that if you don't read weekly already, you probably already should, because Elliot is incredibly dialed into what's going on in hockey and is an incredibly nice fella. And he puts together 31 Thoughts each week. Well worth your read. He also does a podcast, 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Yeah. He then turns the written form into the audio version.
Genres.
And he's also
on
television.
I love that Alex Trebek is the loudest drop that we have.
It's really loud. He's also on television, and he had an incredible quarantine beard that is now gone, which I'm sure his wife is very thankful for. But so this question comes from his 31 Thoughts column, and he wrote that the Hurricanes, among other teams, have expressed some interest in Frederik Andersen, the goaltender for the Maple Leafs. Andersen was a seventh-round draft pick of the Canes back in the day, didn't sign with the Canes, went back into the draft, was drafted by the Anaheim Ducks. Would the Hurricanes, you know, I would have to imagine, again, you know, we've said it before on this podcast, the Hurricanes are going to look at every position to try to improve their team, and that includes the goaltending position, even though you have Peter Mrazek, James Reimer, and Alex Nedeljkovic on a one-way, all under contract for next season. Mm-hmm. So even despite that, the Hurricanes are still going to look at that position in order to improve their team. Do you look at Frederik Andersen? Sure, you look at him, but is that a viable piece? I don't know.
What's
Maybe.
The cost?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the cost? And bottom line for me on all of this is, what does it come down to? Do you feel that he is worth it? Then, all right, maybe you pull the trigger on it. But I'm not sure if you look at Frederik Andersen, trading pieces that you have for a goaltender would be as wise as, I don't know, waiting to see how the free agent market for goaltender shakes out this offseason.
Yeah.
There are going to be some good names who are available to play goal. And if they get to July 1st, we have to say that. If they get to July 1st. So.
Yeah. What is July 1st?
October 1st? I don't know. November?
Mid-October?
It's got to be after the draft, right?
Yeah. So the draft is October 9th and 10th. The Hurricanes, with the 13th overall pick, in case you did not know, that belonged to the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Hurricanes acquired that in the trade for Patrick Marleau. A nice little wheeling and dealing. Couldn't have imagined that it would end up 13th overall.
No.
I think the Hurricanes were projecting it somewhere in the upper 20s or so, and it ends up being 13th overall. That's pretty good.
I just want to check out one thing on Freddie Andersen while we have it.
So he's Swedish.
Again, goaltender.
He plays goal. He's bears a striking resemblance to Ed Sheeran.
Yes, he does. He also has a cap hit of $5 million.
There you go.
And he's 30 years old.
The Hurricanes, wow, he is 30.
Mm. He's not Swedish.
Oh, he's Danish.
He is, yes.
He's Danish.
Go live with the Danish. He's from Denmark.
Yeah, so before everybody tells us he's Danish, that corrects us, he's Danish.
He's Danish.
I just remembered that now that you were like, oh, he's not Swedish. No, he's Danish.
Yeah, a flute with no holes is not a flute. And a donut with no holes is a Danish.
Does he know?
Thank you very little.
That one's going to be. I'm a regular.
Well, it's got to be in the rotation now.
I wonder if he likes gold.
Oh, he has to.
I love gold.
How about no? And he's got 1 year
There's
remaining.
A timely reference.
He's got one more year on his contract.
Yeah.
And there's a no trade clause in it. He has to agree to come to Carolina, a place he didn't come to that drafted him.
Yeah.
So.
So there are fine thoughts question. On Frederik Andersen.
Fine question. Fair question. But, yeah, those are our thoughts. And we corrected our Swedish.
Yeah, he's not Swedish.
He's Danish.
He's Danish. I think I've actually made that mistake before, too. It's an easy mistake to make.
It's any consolation. I thought he was Swede as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, I never thought Zenon Konopka was Canadian. So, sneakiest Canadian name ever.
Or Alexander Barkov. Sounds a lot like a Russian name.
And he's a Swede.
No, he's a Finn.
He's a Finn.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I am now all messed up.
Tune in next week for geography lessons.
Exactly. Do we go all the way back to Olaf Kölzig, who was German?
Well, if you're still listening now, I mean, kudos to you anyway. Yeah,
exactly. In for a penny, in for a pound.
90 minutes into this thing.
So,
all right, well, I think that's all the questions we got.
Yeah, that is all the questions we have.
Run through them all. Perfect.
That's a good spot for us to end this episode, 138 of the Canes Cast.
On location.
From R&D Brewing. Thanks to the great people here. Thank you to Rachel Peterson, the director of marketing for R&D.
Is she Swedish?
I believe she's Danish.
Okay.
Could be Finnish. John Glover, I think, is an American.
Is he related to Danny?
I have not dug that deep.
Okay.
But, and of course, Ian Van Gundy, who is with that beard, related to Stan and Jeff.
There it is.
Although perfect. His Van Gundy is all one word, and I believe the other Van Gundys, there's a separation from Van and Gundy.
We'll get our fact checkers on that. Clearly, exactly. We need some fact checkers because...
We're at R&D Brewing. You can forgive the Swede mistake.
We are at R&D Brewing. Sweden and
Denmark, same country.
Two very similar countries.
Exactly. Danish people, delightful. So are Swedish people.
We're going to get some bad reviews here from Sweden and Denmark.
In Denmark. Or maybe they're going to listen to this point and hear that we congratulated them, and we'll get 5 stars. Best friends for life.
Best friends. Hey, if you listen on Apple Podcasts,
You're going to solicit this now?
Oh, you have to.
Okay.
It's the, if you have a podcast, you do this. You ask for, you know, ratings and reviews, 5 stars. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's the only platform, for whatever reason, that you can rate and review a podcast. Don't really understand why, but whatever.
If you're going to leave 1 star, don't even bother.
Yeah, just, you know,
send us a letter.
Send us a tweet instead.
Oh, yes. And you know my feeling on the comments, so please do.
Yeah, send us a tweet instead, and we'll have a discussion, and then maybe we'll convince you to leave like a 2.5, 3-star review.
No.
Okay.
So that's not even worth my time.
That's fair.
If you're a 2-star, then we can have a discussion. Can we get you up to 3?
But a 1-star review?
No. Wow. I'm going to give us a 1-star review for us, for you playing that.
Thank you.
Took a while for those sound effects to come out of the old vault.
Only one of them should have been dusted off.
Maybe we'll dive into some more in future episodes.
Oh, golly. I hope not. But you can only cross your fingers. So this will do it. And am I correct? I want to make sure I'm correct in our episodes because I've been like...
This is episode 138.
Okay, yes. I've been off on that one.
Yeah.
A little bit.
We'll plan to bring you episode... Ooh, actually, I'm going to the beach next week.
We'll figure something out.
We'll figure something
out. Maybe we'll do a supplemental episode of the Canes Cast. Something totally different.
Maybe.
But related to sports.
Or maybe we'll... I don't know what we'll do.
I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out at some point.
Canes Cast. No, 2020. We'll figure it out. Maybe.
20. Thank you. Dot, dot, dot. 2020. We've got this.
Maybe.
Also, the good folks at R&D, I believe we should have noted this. They left us in charge of the taps.
So,
good move for us.
So, we're going to sign off now.
Yes, we are.
And just make sure everything's working properly. And
apologies to the Danish and the Swedes.
And anyone else who might have been offended.
Well, I don't think they're offended. I just think they're like, how did you not know?
Or might have, you know, disapproved of these last 90 minutes of...
No, I think it's really the last 10 minutes, really, that have gone sideways. Literally. Literally.
That's a good podcast, by the way. Literally with Rob Lowe. Ooh. Yeah, that's a good one.
Is he going to make me eat a peanut butter bar?
Living
that Atkins life?
I don't know. That's a good podcast, though. If you need another podcast besides Canes Cast and besides 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
31 Thoughts, yes.
Check out Literally by Rob Lowe.
I prefer everything with Dr. Jerome Hathaway.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I'd not heard of that one.
You probably haven't. I'll explain it to you when we're done.
Okay.
You're welcome. All right. So thanks to all the great folks here at R&D Brewing for turning over the brewery to us so we can have our sponsors.
And advance apologies.
Apologies as well for letting us run the brewery for the day, or at least run our podcast from here. For the web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you next week.
Moi moi.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this podcast.